Okay, great. So my reminders, again, if you haven't gone out to get the related files, go to our webpage and you'll find them. Note that there's a file that refers to Google Drive, and that will be referenced during the presentation, but I just want to point that out that that's in there, and we have a link to a document that Dr. Stahl will refer to later, but it is linked on our webpage. All other professional development opportunities can also be found on our webpage. We do have things throughout the year, so please check back. During today's webinar, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. At the end of today's webinar, we will share a link to a brief evaluation. Please take a few minutes to complete it. We appreciate your feedback and for completing today's evaluation, as well as all the evaluations throughout this strand, we are raffling off a special book, one for each session, called Academic Vocabulary in Middle and High School. And it's a really great resource, so we hope that you'll do the evaluation and then just put in the optional field with your contact information so we can get a hold of you. We'll do a random draw for that, and we'll announce next week. So please complete that. The New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center is pleased to have Dr. Catherine Stahl with us to present the first webinar in a four-session webinar strand, Teaching Academic Vocabulary Across All Content Areas in Grades 3 through 8. Today's topic is Introduction to Academic Vocabulary. Dr. Stahl is a clinical professor of literacy at New York University. She's done many webinars with her, and we're thrilled to have her back. She has over 25 years in education, and at this time, it is my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Stahl.
Thank you, Molly, and I hope you'll keep me in the loop but also in terms of whether you can hear me or not. Molly, I know you'll be able to let me know if I'm not coming through loud and strong. Welcome, everyone. I'm so glad to see all of you here late this afternoon after a full day of school. I'm very excited to be talking on academic vocabulary and to be working with you over the next four sessions that we'll be doing. And I'm doing the webinar a little differently today. I'm actually broadcasting, which was a little stress-inducing for me because I'm actually broadcasting using my cell phone up at Harvard. And so I'm on all kinds of new equipment in a new environment, so it's been a little nerve-wracking, but I am delighted to see all of you and to be with you this afternoon and for the next four sessions, the next three sessions. So, Molly, if you would please put up the poll so I can learn a little bit about who we have with us today. So if you will choose your one main role so I can see who you are and tailor some of the comments that I make to your particular positions and to the majority of people that we have. So it looks like we've got several special educators, several literacy leaders, and several other folks in other roles as well. And I hope some of you will feel free to turnkey the information that I am providing today. It is now going to be, after each session, it will be owned by the RTI Technical Assistance Center. So feel free to use these slides, to use this information, to turnkey it to the other teachers at your school, that you are actually able to just take it, as long as you credit me and credit the authors of the research that I will be citing, and the TAC Center, or the Technical Assistance Center, you are more than welcome to use these materials that we're sharing with you. Okay, Molly, so we can end the poll now so that we have plenty of time to discuss the content. I think I have a good idea. So here's a roadmap for the vocabulary that work that we will be doing together over this month. So today we'll be addressing goals and terminology so that we're all speaking the same vocabulary and the same language. I will also be talking about some instructional big ideas. And we'll finish off today with addressing how you can select the most the most important vocabulary and for the instructional units that you're working with in your content units. Our next next week we'll be addressing how do we gauge vocabulary growth, and I will show you some isolated assessment techniques that can be used to measure vocabulary development and vocabulary growth, as well as some assessment techniques that can be embedded into instruction so that you can be using them both instructionally and for measurement and to gauge vocabulary knowledge. And then our last two sessions, which will be in October, will be vocabulary activities and teaching techniques. And those will be generic to all disciplines in the content areas. They'll be relevant for ELA, math, science, social studies. Now, I would like to learn a little bit more about what are your top three goals for these sessions. Why are you spending your after-school hours with me during these four sessions? So you may pick three of your top three priorities. Read all five choices and pick your top three goals. So I see a lot of emphasis on helping children through having more tools in my own toolbox. And I also see many people will be turnkeying this information to others in your school. That's terrific. And I encourage you to do this because I think you'll be acquiring several very useful tools. You know, I love these polls because otherwise I feel like I'm just talking into a black hole. So I just really feel like I'm getting to know you through these polls. Thank you. Okay, Molly, I think that we can end that poll as well. Now, typically when we talk about goals for vocabulary acquisition, we really want our kids to acquire and use accurately general academic and domain-specific words and phrases. But we also, one of the challenges of vocabulary is we want our kids to be able to understand those words when they're reading. We want them to use them in their writing and speaking and to understand them when I'm teaching and I'm explaining something to them. We also want to be able to clarify the meaning. We want kids to be able to have some self-help strategies related to vocabulary. We want them to be able to know the appropriate meaning for those multi-meaning words through the utilization of context or to use morphemes and divide meaningful word parts, prefixes, suffixes, those common roots. And we also want children, especially those of our kids who might be English language learners or who may be on the autism spectrum, to be able to understand figurative language and word relationships and particular nuances in word meanings. And then one of the other challenges that we have that we really want to tend to strengthen for our students is to demonstrate independence in utilizing these strategies when they encounter unknown words that are key to comprehension or to clear expression of surrounding a particular topic that is our topic of focus. So these webinars are specific to academic language. They are specific to academic language. And so we want to define and I would like to define for you what I mean when I'm talking about academic language. So academic language, and this is academic language is the umbrella category, all right? Vocabulary is only one piece of academic language. But when we're talking about academic language, we're talking about the kind of discourse that is not characteristic of informal or personal communication. It typically reflects school privileged knowledge. It's the way we talk in school. It's not how we're talking to our buddy on the street. We're not talking this way to our friends on the playground, or for those of us who are adults, at the football party, we're not using academic language. We're using a more informal discourse. There are several other words that people often use, however, to reference academic language and academic vocabulary. So you may hear people call this by content area vocabulary, academic vocabulary, disciplinary vocabulary, general academic vocabulary, domain-specific vocabulary, technical vocabulary, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 vocabulary, or working vocabulary. So you see, even what we call the vocabulary that we all use as educational professionals, that we use to talk about academic language, we may be mixing up our own language and may not be using this language in the same ways. And so I'm going to now define some of those other specific kinds of vocabulary. But remember, academic language is the umbrella term that talks about general kinds of communication that we find in textbooks, in books that we use in schools, and in our conversation about that knowledge in our classrooms. And it differs by content. So the way the English teacher is talking about reading and writing and in response to what you all are reading is very different than the way the science teacher is talking in her classroom about the science activities, the science reading that's being done, and how to write for readers who are building science knowledge. So we have one of the main kinds of academic vocabulary that we have is what we call general academic vocabulary. And general academic vocabulary is also not used in everyday conversation, but it's the kind of vocabulary that appears in all content area instruction. So, for example, when we're using, now you may have familiarity with the Marzano list or the Coxhead list of academic vocabulary. These are particular lists. The Coxhead list is very popular right now. It was a list that Coxhead developed as a researcher to support English language learners. And these were the 500 words that were seen most frequently in academic activities that English language learners needed to have facility with. And so those of us who teach all kids said, gee, we would be happy if all students had mastery of that general academic vocabulary. So you can just Google Coxhead list of academic vocabulary and retrieve this list. But these are words that are fairly general, but that appear in most all academic work that we do. Words that we see like describe, examine, some of them, and we'll talk about this later, might be some tier two kinds of words like figure, which would be words that in some disciplines mean one thing, but in another discipline might mean something else, but that it's generic enough that we really want kids to know that terminology. So general academic vocabulary often does appear across boundaries of disciplines, most of the general academic vocabulary. But then we also have domain-specific vocabulary. Domain-specific terms are limited to a specific context. They're the words that a science teacher would be using. They're words that a social studies teacher would be teaching, or a math teacher. And these tend to be words that are specific to particular content area units that we're teaching, in fact. If you are looking at a textbook, these might be books that are highlighted. The good news about these words, however, is that these are words when we are teaching a disciplinary unit. Let's say we're teaching a unit on China in our history class. These are words, however, that are going to be used repeatedly. The multiple exposures that kids need in order to master new vocabulary, these words are going to be repeated fairly organically within a disciplinary unit, providing us multiple opportunities to teach these words. And that's a good thing because kids need multiple exposures. This domain-specific vocabulary is also required if we want kids to be able to read and understand what they're reading in our unit of study. When I'm teaching and I'm talking about this unit of study, when the children are speaking to each other, when they're in doing a science experiment, when they are doing a research project, when they are having a book club, they need, and when they are doing their own speaking, they need to have facility with this group of domain-specific words that I have selected for this unit. And when they are writing, whether they're writing in response to something they've read, regardless of discipline, whether they are writing in response to a particular text, whether they are writing to explain something or in service of creating an argument or building knowledge, they are going to need to use these words that are specific only to this unit. Now, another thing that has become very popular as a way of categorizing words is the Beck, McCown, and Kukan have come up with the tiers of vocabulary. And so this has become a very popular way of categorizing the words that we are studying. And for example, the tier one words are common everyday words that are used in adult informal discourse. And so we may have some language reticent students or some children with language processing problems that may have difficulty with some of these words, or children who do not have, you know, a very much prior knowledge may have even everyday words that are typically used by adults with, say, high school education. Those are the tier one words. Certainly some of our kids are still going to have problems with those words. However, tier two words are the precise words used by more sophisticated language users, but they also tend to cross most boundaries, most disciplinary boundaries. All right, and the key idea that you need to remember about what makes tier two words unique is that tier two words are words for which the students may know the concept, but they are not familiar with the word, okay? So a word like kerfuffle, that's my favorite Judge Judy word. She uses that word a lot, all right? That's a word that most kids may not know that word, but they know the concept. Or something like conundrum, all right? They know what a conundrum is, but they've never heard that word, and they may label it by a more simplistic term. Or operate. And you'll find that many of the words on Coxhead's general list and Marzano's list that are tier two words, all right? They're words that may cross the discipline, all right? But children may need to receive a definition and have it explained to them what that word means. And those are important words that they do need to know, often to complete a task. Now, Tier 3 words are specialized terms that are specific to a disciplinary content area. These are our toughest words to teach. That they need a lot more. They need a lot more instruction. As Rand Spiro says, these are words for which you need to crisscross the landscape, and these are words that will be acquired throughout the unit, because deeper levels of understanding are necessary. A definition doesn't suffice for these words. You can't just give a definition or a synonym. Things like democracy, photosynthesis, apartheid. Those are examples of the Tier 3 words that children need rich connections with the content and with other related words to truly have an understanding of what Tier 3 words are. They are, do not exist in isolation. Now, I would like you to read this passage for me. And I would like you to read it with the purpose of answering the question, what did researchers determine about the administration of aspirin post-orthopedic surgery? And then you might, don't jot it down on the chat box, please, but jot it down on a piece of paper. Read this passage for me, and then on your own scratch paper, decide what your research conclusion is. So I'm going to give you a couple minutes to do this. I'm still with you. And I'm patiently waiting for you to read this paragraph. I'm going to give you one more minute to finish reading and to write your research conclusion for the passage. I won't be grading it. I won't even be seeing it. Only you will be able to see it. Okay, time is up. Now, for some of you, this may have been, that's not the right, Molly, would you please now show what made the passage difficult to read? So now, folks, I would like you to fill out the poll for me. This may have been difficult for some of you. And so now I would like you to choose as many as apply. For this particular poll, you may identify, select what made that passage difficult for you to understand and to draw a conclusion. Oh, folks, that should, number two should say, I did not have the prior knowledge. That should say, I did not have the prior knowledge necessary to understand and apply some words that I did recognize. So I suspect you realize, and as you see, there were many things. It wasn't just that the words were hard in this passage. You know, so I'm sure you recognize that I gave you this passage from a medical journal to put you in the same situation that many of our students may be feeling as they are sitting in our classrooms. And it's not just that they might not know the words. You know, when we talk about academic vocabulary, that is certainly one thing. But there's a lot more going on with these difficult passages that are giving our kids problems. And the problems they are having are many of the same problems that you had, prior knowledge, all right? So even if you recognize some of the words, when you put it together in that particular context, knowing the words didn't really help because you didn't have the background knowledge about those kinds of an orthopedic surgeon, a surgery. There were probably many words in there that you did not know the meanings for. But also the discourse was difficult, how it was written, how it was phrased. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a researcher. I don't talk like that. I don't read material that is written like that. And think about that. Our kids are not, they are not teachers. Our kids are not academics. Our kids are not scientists. Our kids are not historians. It is our job, and this is one of the things that is so unique about being a middle school science teacher, social studies teacher, and math teacher, and ELA teacher, that what our kids may know how to read, just like you're a very good reader. You're among the best readers in the country. You're teachers. You love reading. But even a task like I just gave to you in a little paragraph, it was difficult because you don't talk like that. Our kids need to learn in our classrooms, in our science classrooms, to read and write and talk like scientists do when they're building knowledge. How do historians talk and read and write when they're building science knowledge or historical knowledge? It's the discourse, and that is what part of our role as content area teachers is. Also, I think you all probably experienced even though that was a short paragraph, the volume of having so many long and unfamiliar words made it tough going, and it was difficult to stay engaged in that. Probably by sentence number two, many of you, and I wouldn't blame you, many of you may have said, I don't want to do this. I can't do this. I'm no doctor. And for most of us, it was not all that enjoyable. Maybe if we recently had some orthopedic surgery, we might have been a little motivated and thought, I wonder if my doctor, was using aspirin. How long was I receiving the aspirin? And so it gave us a little motivation to find out what the outcomes were. But all of these things are ways that our kids feel when they are encountering some of the texts that we are sharing in our classrooms. So, Molly, I'm going to, if you'll remove that, thank you. And again, some features of academic language are in academic language, they use in academics and in writing. This is the part we have to teach our kids to do, is in academic language, precise language is used to explain complex ideas. It's very precise and it's to the point. It's often associated with abstract concepts and higher order thinking. It's skipping the concrete bottom part and jumping right to the higher level thinking. And we may need to do some questioning and interrogation to get kids to take advantage of that higher order thinking. And it's embedded in disciplinary discourse and an academic linguistic register, all right? And I think another good example for you is to consider your explanation to a school counselor. Let's say you have a child who is encountering difficulties in school, and think about how you talk around the table to the CST or to the guidance counselor about that student. compared to how you address those same issues in a parent-teacher conference. And that's we're addressing now discourse. And that our classrooms, and I love this, Elizabeth Moji has a wonderful article in RRQ from several years ago, and it was called something about third space. But I think the takeaway for this slide is that our classrooms for kids need to be that third space. Our classrooms need to be the place where they bring the knowledge they have, whatever that knowledge may be, and we then play the role as translator, teacher, interpreter, and tool giver, tool provider, so that children can then understand and read, write, talk, and listen like the masters of the discipline. The other thing is in our academic classrooms, the purpose of this academic language is to build knowledge in a field. That's why it's a little different. When in English, in ELA, the academic language is different than it is in science, because what counts as evidence is different in those two classes. And so each of us read and write and talk in different ways that fulfills the purpose of how we build knowledge in our discipline. The other thing that's difficult is the complex sentences, including dependent subordinate clauses, you know, are more difficult to read for everybody. And so that's, you know, think about the Lexiles. As the Lexiles go up in difficulty, go higher in numbers, it's because those sentences and the sentence formations are becoming more complex. One of the other things is that typically when we're writing, we're taught to use an active voice. In ELA, our teachers teach us to use an active voice, but that is not the voice that we use in science. We're using a passive, objective voice. And so, and that's particularly confusing for readers, especially for some L's whose first language may not have a passive voice. Also, there are some basic understandings about teaching vocabulary. And that means that we are trying to do it in all four dimensions, okay? We have the oral dimension and written dimension. And we have the receptive of listening and reading, which are both receptive areas. So we may be a little stronger, and our kids may have stronger vocabulary in those receptive areas compared to what their expressive is. But we have to be constantly, as teachers, be the jugglers of making sure that there is instruction in all four areas as well as opportunities for kids to practice in all four areas and assessment in all four areas. Otherwise, we don't know where they are and how much they've grown. And we're really going to talk about that next week when we're talking about assessment. Vocabulary learning is everybody's responsibility, all the teachers, because we've just talked about in terms of disciplinary differences. Students have a self-responsibility. Students have their own bear some of the responsibility for learning vocabulary as well. And we need to place that responsibility on their shoulders. Our school principal has an important role to play, as do parents. So we are all in this together. No one has to carry the burden themselves. And we also don't want to really be pointing fingers at anybody, because each of us has enough to do in terms of our own responsibility. And so we don't want to point fingers at others. We just want to do the best possible job that we can do in the role we have. A big challenge about vocabulary instruction, particularly coming from both ends, whether we're talking about the high flyers or whether we're talking about our students who may have language processing differences, such as those children that many of you in speech and language and special education see, or whether it's children who are just language reticent or children who have for financial reasons, have very few prior little knowledge of the outside world. That vocabulary learning is incremental. And so we have to understand those individual differences to really appreciate where our kids are and where we want them to go. We want everybody to be growing. And so vocabulary learning is never all or nothing. There's always more to learn. We all are learning every day. As teachers, we have a lot of curiosity and love for words. So we are the type of people who we are very word conscious, and we embrace what we don't know about vocabulary, and it piques our curiosity. So there's always more to learn. Even for our high flyers, we want to make sure that we are measuring where they are and measuring how they've grown during this unit. It also, because vocabulary learning is incremental, it requires multiple encounters in multiple modalities, listening, reading, speaking, and writing. Kids need to be doing all four of those things with their new vocabulary words and in multiple contexts. The other big thing, I should have put this in red. I should have put this in red because this is one of our biggies. Just looking up words in the dictionary or even the friendly glossary and writing down those definitions doesn't cut it. All the research, every single bit of research says that for children to acquire ownership of new vocabulary, they must have multiple exposures. It must be active. They must be talking. If kids are learning vocabulary, you're hearing talking. It's not quiet. It's not just pencil paper. It has to be engaging. It's very, very, very social. And so you want to do everything possible that you can do to avoid the kinds of activities and programs that have kids doing things in ways that they are isolated by themselves, sitting by themselves in a book or a computer program, or that are done in rote ways. Those are things we want to avoid rote, we want to avoid isolated. If a kid is going to learn a new word, it's because they've been active with it. It's because they've been social with it. Here are the components that our vocabulary programs need to have. You want to have comprehensive vocabulary instruction, all right? To have a comprehensive vocabulary instruction, you want to foster word consciousness. And I see something over here about ethnic vocabulary. All of us are, and you know, whether it's Ebonics or whether it's like I spent 27 years in the Deep South. And so we all have, in New York, we're going to get online. You know, so we all have our own little idiosyncrasies of way we talk. And we really want to foster in our kids that word consciousness. We want them to embrace the different ways that people use words. We want them to embrace new words, but not only new words, but to be fine-tune their listening to when I talk certain ways. Just like I said, if I'm going on a job interview, I'm not going to talk at the job interview or doing a webinar. I'm not talking the same way I talk to my teacher friends or to my girlfriends, all right, at the restaurant. So we want to develop that kind of ear for language so that children can put on a different language and code switch, not just code switch from English to Spanish, but code switch from formal language to more informal language, and to really have their ears listening for that. We definitely want to teach some individual words. We want to teach them explicitly and to have that as part of our curriculum. We want to provide rich and varied language experience for our kids. And we want to actually teach kids word learning strategies. So we do want, and I'm going to address this in all each of the different webinars, I'm going to be addressing each of these things. But these are the components. And in terms of word learning strategies, we're talking about morphology. You know, yes, we do want to be teaching kids derivatives, prefixes, suffixes in multiple contexts, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that later. But that does need to be a part. We need to teach kids the appropriate way to use context. We don't want to just say, I have been in classrooms, y'all. I have been in classrooms where I have said, heard teachers say to children, well, use the context. But what was of concern is that the context did not provide the answer, did not provide any clues to that meaning of that word. So we really want to be very deliberate with our students in teaching them when context will not work, when context is misleading, when we want to just not worry about it if we don't know a word, and then when are the examples of when context helped us figure can help us figure that word out. That's five different instances. And I think often we just provide kids with a generic prompt, use context, without attention to the other four dimensions of that. So these four aspects are what we should be our rich, comprehensive vocabulary instruction should entail all of these. Now, there are some elements of effective vocabulary instruction, okay? Now, remember, this is designed for disciplinary teachers, whether you're in third grade teaching a social studies unit or whether you are in eighth grade teaching a math unit and you only teach math, or you are in sixth grade, you only teach science. All right, this is for those disciplinary areas. This is the kind of what I'm talking about in these four presentations, these four webinars. So first of all, you want to select, if you're working on a unit, you want to select high utility words for the unit and those that have, as well as some of those Coxhead words that have high generalizability across the tasks in the unit. That's when it's okay to pick the Coxhead words. You do not want to go to that Coxhead or Marzano list and say, okay, our whole school is going to do these 10 words this month. The words from those generalizable lists have got to be also embedded within the unit. We don't want to just pick those 5 words a week or 10 words a week from the Coxhead list and say, okay, everybody, learn these 10 words, and say, we're going to, oh, our whole grade level team is going to teach these 10 words. That's not really the highest utilization, the most effective utilization of your time. It's better to, when you're teaching a unit on, on China, if you are having the kids do particular tasks, which are the Coxhead words that are most useful for defining what those tasks are that you're wanting the children to do? Like culture. That would be when we would teach culture. So, focusing on high utility words and the high generalizability words within inserting them. Help students identify important unit words themselves and their level of knowledge. We want to provide also explicit instruction with opportunities to build incremental knowledge across the unit through different types of activities. So again, you want kids to have opportunities to read, write, speak, and listen to the words, but you also want to have a lot of different kinds of activities. You want to have sometimes them doing concept maps. You want to sometimes them having doing discussions that are using the words. You want them sometimes doing, writing, formulating a maybe a hypertext dictionary, making, you know, across the unit, kids are assigned different words, and during the unit, they're adding to their electronic dictionary entry that they're responsible for. So, you know, we certainly want to provide definitions, but we want to make it as active as possible. And we want to keep those lessons flowing and keeping it present throughout the unit. And one of the best ways that you can keep attention and word consciousness present on the words is by posting the words. Every classroom, whether it's third grade or whether it's eighth grade math, should have a word wall of the words that are the focus of the content unit for that 3 weeks or that time period. And I'm not talking about high-frequency words or an alphabetical word list. I'm talking about the list of words that you want your kids to know at the end of the unit. And you want them to be able to speak those words, write those words, know the words when they hear them, and you're wanting them having those words at their fingertips when they're writing something for you during that unit. There should be a content area word wall in every single classroom, okay? And it's also to remind us as teachers, oh, I can bring that word in here and show another way it relates to what we're talking about now. Yes, I taught the definition of it 2 weeks ago, and yes, we've done some work on it, but there's a way that relates to these concepts that I'm teaching today, and I might just want to make that explicit for my kids. And school-wide, now, here is what I do believe about the morphology development. I think that as a school, you need to decide, and usually the ELA people will take charge of this, because that's where the foundation should probably start. And I'm not saying you would have to do it this way. I just think this is a systematic approach that might work well, is that the ELA people would provide the introduction to those words, and that they would sort of set out the scope and sequence for when the prefixes, suffixes, and base words are introduced. And then there would be ongoing addressing of it within the content areas as relevant. But there should be a school-wide, as a school, we know where this is happening. Now, vocabulary learning is incidental and intentional. It's incidental and intentional. So incidental, some of the children learn, and I don't have the numbers with me today, but they learn like thousands and thousands of, they learn about 3,000 words every year, I think. And so by the end of their schooling, they've learned, you know, I don't want to say the number, because I do have this in other slide presentations, but the majority of their learning of words is occurring through incidental ways of wide reading, listening, visual media, and discussion. That is the largest source of word learning, incidental learning. With that being said, we do need to do, there also needs to be intentional learning. An intentional teaching of individual words, of word learning strategies, of providing, and the word learning strategies are those context strategies and morphological analysis, also providing definitions for kids in multiple contexts. And one of the things that we often leave out is the word relationship. And that's what I think that we can really improve on a lot. For those of you who are here, many of you probably knew a lot of what we went over in this introductory session. But I think one of the ways that Beck and McCallan have said that we can improve, even those of us who are pretty good at being aware of teaching vocabulary to our students, is that we can probably do a little better in helping our kids see in relationships between words. And then multiple exposures are imperative, word walls, word notebooks, and other kinds of monitoring devices. And fostering word consciousness in our kids of that, you know, learning how to learning the nuances of word meanings, of being excited about words they don't know instead of trying to mumble over those words, hide that they don't know it, put a mask on, and finesse it. We want them to embrace what they don't know. Now, I want to see if you're still awake. I want to make sure you're still with me. It's 5 o'clock. Would you consider playing words with friends an intentional or incidental word-building activity? I want to see that you're all still with me. Is it deliberate, a deliberate set of words, or is it incidental? Haphazard based on spots you have, haphazard based on words that other people happen to be using that you didn't know that was a real word. So in the majority of cases, it is going to be incidental. In the majority of cases, it will be incidental. Okay, so Molly, we can end that one. We can end that poll. But words with friends, it is a good way to stretch our vocabularies somewhat. Although I think Scrabble is still better. I do a lot of guessing and hoping on words with friends. Okay, 3 ways to teach words. So now we're going to be getting into some of the nitty-gritty that you will need to be doing for... we're going to talk a little bit about word selection and how we select words and a process for doing that. And then I'm going to ask you to do some of that before we meet next week. And so these next few slides are information that you will need to utilize in your process of selecting words for a unit that you teach. So there are 3 ways that we can teach words, and they need to be matched with the particular kinds of words that we're teaching, that we intend to teach. So flooding kids with words is basically we are reading rich and varied text to kids. They have books that they are selecting that they're reading, and in the content areas, they are reading not only long textbooks, but they're also reading primary sources, they're having rich language experiences, and they're doing semantic overviews of the words that are in this unit and how they relate to each other. So we're really flooding kids with words. The fast way to teach words is that this is what you do with Tier 2 words, that you are able to provide a definition, you're able to provide a synonym, and maybe give them some semantic decision activities, like is a football or a glass holiday ornament fragile? So having them do activities like that, or having them do some kinds of conceptual sorts, would be a fast way to teach some Tier 2 words. You're definitely providing them with the definition, but because they already know the concept, you're teaching it once, and then they're having a couple times to use it, and they've got it, all right? And you want it on the word wall, though, to remind them of it so that they know it. They say, oh, that's right, I could use that word stroll instead of walk, and so they're using it. And then we have our focus. Our focus instruction is elaborated instruction that calls for concept development over time, involving both definitions and a series of exposures with contextual and word relationship activities. Those focus activities, that's what we're going to be learning in November or I'm sorry, October. I'm getting ahead of myself. At the two webinars that we're going to be having in October are going to be the activities that you can use. They look very different, but you're going to be able to use them within the same unit to provide kids a different multifaceted lens on these words and to help them see how these words relate to each other, to give them another chance to learn the other nuance of these words. So those are the words, this is the kind of instruction we need to be providing to Tier 3 words. Now, how do we teach a focus word? All right, and I'm just going to go over this very quickly because this is also going to be revisited in more depth in session three. But you can come back and revisit this, and you can start practicing this between now and session three. So that way, if you have any questions or if there happen to be any bumps in the road, you can ask those questions. So how do you teach a focus word? And this goes for all content area words, okay? So the way you would first, this is the introduction. You say it, they hear it, they repeat it, then the children would be able to see it and read it and say the word, okay? You actually, as the teacher, are extracting the word from the text and reading it in the context of what you're studying or in the context of the passage. You then provide a student-friendly, precise definition. You use the word in another sentence or two, providing additional opportunities for students to hear the word in a meaningful context. And you can also generate some additional, you may not want to do this the first time. You might or might not generate or prompt some additional oral examples from some of your students. Up to you to do that on first introduction. You do want the kids to record the word in the vocabulary section of a notebook. You want them to have, in these disciplinary content areas, they should have a vocabulary section of their notebook. And then you would need to follow up over the next couple weeks with independent and small group activities, awareness activities, semantic relationship maps, conceptual organizers, sorting, clustering, and visual aids. And again, that's all the content of session 3 and 4. How many words do you select to teach? Well, there is no right answer. What Ogle et al. Found, though, is that the schools in their studies averaged about 8 to 12 words per week, okay, and each discipline. So social studies, 8 to 12 words a week, math, 8 to 12 words a week that they were working on, science and so forth. Or another way to put this is the 25 to 30 words in a 3 to 4 week content unit, okay? Now, I want to use this opportunity, you know, Ogle et al., I want to remind you that most of this material came from that book that you saw on the slide 2, The Academic Vocabulary by Ogle, Blackowitz, Fish, and Fisher. And so almost all these ideas are in that book. That's the book that will be also is going to be given away in our random evaluation raffle. So, a lot of these ideas are from them. Now, the other thing in terms of how many words, so that gives you a pretty good guide, 25 to 30 per unit, all right, per content unit. Consider accountable words based on the unit. Choose high utility and important conceptual words. And also, if you've got a lot of hard concepts that you're teaching, like in fourth grade, when you do that science unit in terms of states of matter, those words are not hard. snow, ice, and so forth. But the concept of what causes condensation and precipitation, those are hard concepts. So you might want to make fewer words, because the concepts that undergird those, that are the foundation of those ideas, are very difficult to understand, to really have knowledge of that word, of that tier three word, condensation. And that goes along with, you need to consider the level of concreteness or abstraction of words. Concrete ideas are much easier for kids to learn than abstract concepts like democracy or justice. Now, this is the technique that you will be using to your, what you're going to do before we meet next week is you are going to think about one content area unit that you teach, whether it's the fourth grade Native Americans unit or whatever unit you're teaching in, you know, maybe some kind of a unit on China and the culture of China. You might be doing that in, say, seventh or eighth grade. And so you are going to, or the Depression, the era of the Depression. So what you are going to do is you are going to use these ideas to select 25 to 30 words, or somewhere between 20 to 30 words for your content unit. Essential words are words that are critical to understanding the text and the unit content. Okay? Those are words that you definitely want all kids having a rich understanding of when you get to the end of this unit. Valuable words are general academic vocabulary with enduring importance in academic reading and writing in multiple domains. Economics, the word economics. That's going to be, across the years, is going to be a term, whether it's in fifth grade when kids are actually doing that, our hemisphere, the Western Hemisphere unit, and building a foundation for that word economics is going to transfer when kids are moving into sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, doing more sophisticated studies of international turmoil. They need to know the economic implications. And so those are valuable words. Accessible words are more common words that may pose a challenge to any students with limited vocabulary or banks of prior knowledge. And so those are some of those words that, you know, maybe 60% of the kids in your class know, but your certain kids may not have that in their experience, in their language experience. And so you want to make a note of that for yourself. And then imported words. Imported words are not in the text, but they will enhance the understanding of a text or unit. For example, those are words that are maybe derivatives of the word. Like when you start talking about immigrants, immigrate, emigrate, migrant, when you start talking about that body of words, we're now talking about some focus words, some essential words, and then you're going to add some other imported words. That is from the Graves work, but I also have a chart to make this more concrete for you. And this is the table that you are also going to complete when you are selecting some words for one of your upcoming grade level units. So, for example, this is in the Ogle book, and it's some words from a Chinese unit for middle school, all right? And so here are the words this person selected, and then they categorize the words as either essential, valuable, accessible, or imported, what we just had on that last slide. That's where that came from, okay? And then once you've selected those words, what type of instruction is going to be needed for the kids to utilize it and for it to accomplish my aim? So, for example, Bastion, that is going to be in something that we're reading, but, you know, I don't need to spend any appreciable time teaching that word. They're going to be able to infer it from the context, from the picture that was in the read works that I had them read related to that, or from the passage that I had. So they're going to be able to infer that, and particularly from the other stuff we're talking about. And so these you can't see. This is commerce, and this is, I think, was commercial. I don't know, that got cut off in the slide. So you see how these are derivatives of each other. And so whether something is valuable or whether it's essential may also dictate whether you're going to focus instruction, have some fast instruction, or whether you're just going to allow the kids to infer it. So our next steps, hopefully before next week. If not, I'd like to have you do some of these before next week. And Molly has created a Google Drive where you can make select your vocabulary for your unit and add it to your Google Drive. So you're going to select an upcoming unit of study, disciplinary study, ELA, science, social studies, math. Use the vocabulary selection worksheet in your folder, that same folder that Molly signaled that's on the website. You are going to use SWIT to select a list of 15 to 25 target vocabulary words, or 15 to 30, whatever is appropriate for the unit. The unit is what dictates the number. And then you're going to identify the type of instruction that is best suited to meet the demands of the word. And optional, you can share your completed worksheet with our group. I think that's one of the advantages of us working in a webinar like this. And again, here Molly has kindly posted where you can find the vocabulary selection worksheet. And I put it as a doc so you can alter it yourself. And then you can, so I think those are the directions for adding your worksheet to the Google Drive. And so you do one and you end up with 56 of these. And so that's why I would really encourage you all to do this, get active, and, have this as a product of your hard work and your afternoon spent this afternoon with us.
And Kate, if I could just clarify a little bit,
because
Helen has posted that she doesn't have Google Drive. If you have a Google account, you should be able to get into Google Drive. And if you're really struggling, you can email me. And the worksheet is also linked on our webpage. You could email that to me, and I can put it in for you. The downside is you won't be able to see all of them, but I don't want that to be a roadblock for you, so I hope that's okay if I offer to receive them via email.
Oh, absolutely. That would
okay.
be terrific. You can just go open yourself a little Google email account, that's a private account that's not associated with your school stuff, and do it that way and be actively participating that way. Now, two reminders. We will be meeting next week. I love the topic next week. I love it. I get very excited about vocabulary assessment because so few people really do it other than the old boring multiple choice and definition stuff. And I've got some very fun, wonderful things for next week that I just love sharing with you. So that'll be next Thursday. I'll be back in my comfort zone, back at NYU next week, in my comfort zone with a real phone, not my cell phone, which makes me a little nervous. And don't forget to fill out the evaluation so that you can be part of the raffle for this wonderful, wonderful book. And thank you all and for your hard work and your after school time, and I hope to see you next week. Thanks.
And I just posted a link to the survey, and I thank you all so much. Thank you, Kay, for a wealth of information. Truly wonderful, and we can't wait for next week. Thank you.
Okay, see you next week, everybody. Thank you all.
Take care.